So, Jessica, you were talking about this blueprint view that everything that happens is part of this divine plan and God's just checking off the boxes, whether it's good or bad or whatever. He's just checking those boxes off as things occur. But there are some challenges to looking at pain and suffering specifically through this view. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So the blueprint worldview, and you summed it up well, is the belief that history is this unfolding of God's meticulous divine blueprint. And it comes packaged in two forms. So the strong form of the blueprint worldview is the belief that God planned everything, even the bad things, to happen as part of a blueprint to bring him glory. And the weak form is the belief that God doesn't necessarily cause the bad things to happen, but that he specifically allows them for a mysterious higher purpose. And an illustration that I use in the book of this would be like a father standing by a family swimming pool as his toddler drowns. So in the strong form of the blueprint worldview, the father is the one who pushed him in or makes sure that he falls in. And in the weak form, the father never touches the child, but he still fails to intervene as the child creeps near the edge and overreaches for that bobbing beach ball. Now, in either case, this blueprint worldview that I used to hold leaves us with several questions, such as, if this is God's character, how can I ever trust him? How does this view of God reconcile with the God revealed in Jesus, who healed the sick and raised the dead and did everything he could to bring life to the full? If this is love and God is love, what does love even mean? So these are some of the problems that I see with the blueprint worldview. And in transitioning to a warfare worldview, my faith was better equipped to handle this tragedy because I rather believe that God's will is not the only will that determines what comes to pass, that there's a multiplicity of wills that affect what happens, and that all evil ultimately originates in wills other than God.
So if there's this multitude of wills going on, how does that measure with the sovereignty of God? How can you explain that? And who is it that he's having war with? And are we in that war?
Such a great question. Sovereignty is such a key issue. And so I dedicate an entire question to that in the back of Lord Willing to get into the nuances of it. But I think that a lot of us are accustomed to thinking of sovereignty as meticulous control over whatever comes to pass. And the problem with that is when we view God as meticulously controlling every detail, we rule out the possibility of love. Because 1 Corinthians 13 tells us love does not insist on its own way. It can't be forced. It must be chosen. And so when God creates beings that can freely choose love or reject love, then we see that he's not created something that he meticulously controls. Ian and I, we wanted to expand our love, and so we had children, children that could accept it or could reject it. We took a risk in having children because we didn't know for sure that they would return our love when they were adults, but we hoped that they would. If we wanted to meticulously control everything that happened, we would have gotten a doll that said, I love you, when we pull a string on its back, but we wanted to have a real, authentic relationship. And so I think we can look at God's sovereignty, his ruling authority, in terms of his love, in terms of the cross. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1 that the cross is the wisdom and the power of God. And that doesn't make sense to a lot of us. But I think when we see God flex his omnipotent muscle, we see a God getting crucified at the hands of his enemies out of love for his enemies. And we learn to rely then, I've learned to rely then, on a God of creativity, a God of wisdom, a God of sacrifice, and a God of unfailing love.
So when we look at God's love in this way, where he loved us, he took a risk in creating us, that risk allowed for this rejection that might take place, and that allowed for this multitude of wills, but that God is still always with us. How did you start looking at verses like Romans 8:28, which seems to be this almost cliche that is given to people who have lost someone or something? How did you look at that differently with this worldview versus the worldview of a blueprint?
And I'm so glad you brought that verse up. I go into detail about that in chapter 10 of the book. And that is such a key verse because we're accustomed to looking at Romans 8:28 through a version like maybe the New Living Translation that says God causes everything to happen. He's working it all out for our good. But there are other versions of the Bible that say that God, in everything, God is working with us to bring about good. And the verb that's in question there is the word from which we get our word synergy. And so I talk about a scholar in the book who says that verse isn't about God working various ingredients together. It's about God working together with us to bring good no matter what comes to pass. And I think that's what's been the most exciting part of embracing a warfare worldview for me is that I know that no matter what comes to pass, God will meet it with purpose. He will meet that pain with purpose. Some people say, well, if God didn't plan my pain, then it must be meaningless. God had to have planned it for it to have purpose. And to them, I would say, I don't believe that Henry suffered and that Henry died at 4 years old because God planned for that to happen. But I believe that God meets that pain with purpose at every corner.
So how did adopting this warfare view, which was long before Henry was diagnosed anyway, but how has it allowed you to see God's love now that you're going through not only what you went through with Henry, but what you're going to go through really for the rest of your life as you grieve his loss?
Well, rather than trying to accept that this is somehow meant to teach me a lesson or that I'm supposed to somehow be better now that my child has died, the way I would have struggled to do under a blueprint worldview, rather than trying to figure out how to thank God for this terrible thing, instead I'm able to really call it evil. Call it a tragedy, and to be able to then welcome those moments when I see good being brought to it as being from God. The other day, I was getting my daughter ready for back to school, and every time we go into a transition now, I'm reminded of the transitions that I had with Henry, and I wanted to get him ready for back to school. I wanted to buy him new shoes and a new backpack, and I couldn't do it. So I was having a really rough night, and I remember in prayer and with my husband, just crying and pouring out my heart. And in the morning, I had all of these messages through social media channels from people saying, I've just encountered your story for the first time. And boy, is it bringing me closer to God. Or I just gave your book to someone who really needed it, and you should have seen the look on her face. And so what sustains me moving forward is that I can welcome those instances as being from the God that I recognize, a loving God who creatively meets me and brings purpose to this pain.
You know, I'm glad you brought up prayer, because that was something that is so important as we come in contact with people who have lost someone or who are praying for something to happen. And with this worldview, the warfare worldview, we are participants in this process of prayer, in communicating with God, where some people might say, well, prayer is just a way to really change our hearts. And so it's God's not going to change. It's just a way to change us. But how do you respond to that?
I would say Jesus encouraged us to pray that God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven, which assumes that it's not. That very statement presupposes that his will is not always being done on earth as it is in heaven. And so I think just as we've been given free will to decide what we're going to do each day, and that's our say-so in how we live our lives in this physical realm, that prayer is our degree of say-so in what happens in the spiritual realm. And so I think in this view, prayer is dynamic and it's powerful and it has the ability to affect change.
It's just such an encouraging way to look at communicating with God, and how when we are going through something, to gather people in prayer, to have them participate in this process, and that this view of who God is really allows for that. So as you come in contact with, I'm sure you do, people who have really had this crisis of faith and have given up on God, how do you encourage them?
Well, I've heard from people who have said that when they believe that their tragedy happened according to God's perfect plan, they shut a door, they walked away, or they found themselves bound by anger and by resentment. And so the most meaningful feedback that I get from the book is the letters of people that say, I'm taking baby steps back, or I'm taking a full breath now. Or when people tell me that God loves me, it doesn't feel like an insult anymore because I can really make sense of that.
It does seem that sometimes we don't know what to say. And so the answers that some people may give really hurt more than they help. What can you tell people what can we say to those who are going through a significant loss, and how can we encourage them and still be encouraging of who God is?
I think that there are three points that I like to keep in mind when someone's hurting. And the first is that if someone's theology doesn't line up with our own and they're in the midst of trauma, don't challenge them. Mm-hmm. Allow them to fall back into the beliefs that have always sustained them and go through that trauma with the beliefs that they're holding tight to. Because we never want to compound someone's crisis with a crisis of faith. So to be really sensitive to what I like to say, the victim drives the theology car. So being mindful of that victim and letting them drive their theology car. The second thing I would say is to avoid blueprint explanations. Even those who hold the blueprint worldview, will often say, don't give explanations, because we don't need to hear in the midst of a trauma, God knows what he's doing. I mean, that ultimately means that whatever's happening is going to be for the best, and that's not always the case. So avoiding those blueprint explanations, I think, is key. And I think a third thing that I get really excited about, and the reason I wrote the book, one of the main reasons I wrote the book, was if we can have these conversations about God's role in suffering today, then our faith is better equipped for tomorrow's pain. We're better able to organically draw from the shared conversations that we've had with one another about what God's role is when it comes to pain and suffering. And there were, you know, I have an example. There were a couple of women in my church that I attend, and they had heard me give a sermon, which the book is based upon, on this topic. And they hadn't heard really it laid out like that before, so they processed it for months together. Whenever they got together, they would talk about it. Well, you know, what does that mean for this or that? And then one of those women met with tragedy. And she tells me they were better able to remind one another of what they had wrestled with, of what they had learned. They were organically better able to weather that tragedy without the anger, without the resentment of wondering why God would plan that for her. And so their conversations organically stemmed from the work that they had done. And so that's what I get excited about, is that people can wrestle today so that their faith is better equipped for tomorrow's pain.
Sure, and to ask questions now, because then it might make a little more sense than once you're in that journey of pain that you're going through, to be able to rely on. You've already talked about it, you've already wrestled with it, and it does seem like it would make it a little bit more palatable.
It's what allowed me to fall into God's arms without reservation when Henry died. I had wrestled with my picture of God, and I fully believe that he was on the side of bringing life to the full, that he wasn't behind the tumor that destroyed my son's life.